growing up in a chaotic household to be the performer, always performing, always achieving. And this lie that I believed was that if I wasn't doing that, the people around me would realize I'm not worth sticking around for. That's part of the process, is becoming aware of what your bricks are, what bricks you've built, and then exposing the lie and naming the room. It's really powerful to name the room. When you name it, you can actually see it and you can start tearing down the walls and then step into the new room with intention and from a place of alignment and power.
At militarycreatorcon.com.
Great XQ. Roger.
Super excited today to be joined by Jody Friedman. How are you today, Jody?
I'm good, James. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, super excited. A good friend of mine, LaShawn, kind of talks very highly of you, and he's a good friend of mine. Like, we just kind of talked to pre-interview. So, you know, really, really excited to kind of hear, kind of dig in a little bit of your background and, you know, introduce you to the Military Creator audience. So thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So tell me, you know, a little bit about, I guess, your career path to some degree. You've done a lot of cool, interesting things, and you know, I really want to give you a chance to tell people who may not know you at all and what you've done, you know, kind of some of the cool things you've been involved in.
Sure. Yeah. I've been a creative my entire life, as long as I can remember, and really leaned into that, even coming through college. I went to college for TV production. And really, I did that because I didn't get into FSU, Florida State Film School. And the backup when you didn't get into film school, which was number three in the nation at the time, was to do TV production. So I did that for about 7 years. I worked at CNN out of college and had 7 years at CNN in Atlanta and then New York, and then came out west, worked on Larry King for a couple years. And then I pivoted. Along the way, I was always pursuing music, a music career. So I wanted to get signed to a record label and tour the world and make an impact through songs, because at my core, I'm a songwriter first and foremost. But so I stayed true to that. And the song really pushed my journey forward as a creative. When I was in Atlanta working at CNN, they had a talent show called CNN Idol. This was 2002. American Idol had just come out. And I won that contest. I wrote a song about my job and I performed it in front of everybody. And I won, and it got me into the office of the president the next day and got me to New York. So that song got me the job in New York. And then again, still gigging and just unfulfilled, really, at working in news. I never liked news. As a little kid, I was so bored with the news. It was so negative. Even today, for my mental health, I try not to watch too much of it. So after 7 years working at CNN, I was pretty tired of it.
Can I ask you a question? I don't know, sure. Just totally off, but the morning show, have you seen with Jennifer Aniston in it? I forget the, yeah. Or Reese Witherspoon. So how do they, I know it's made for TV drama. And it's entertainment, but it's, you know, is there some components of that that really is kind of the day-to-day at a news organization, or is that
somewhat
too dramatized?
Yeah, no, it's very dramatized, but they do capture the flow of the newsroom really, really well in that show. I believe that show is modeled after The Daily Show, but they all work like that. I worked on Good Morning America. It was also similar to that. So the DNA is there, but it's definitely amplified, you know, to the 30th degree with that show.
Yeah, sorry. As you were saying it, I all of a sudden couldn't think anything. I just, like, you know, re-hearing some of the stuff I saw. And I know, you know, even in the military space, I know some things are accurate and some things are definitely, you know, made for TV and made for entertainment. But so
pressure's there. The pressure is serious in news. And I always thought it was so stupid, to be honest. I can say that now because I don't work in it anymore. I thought it was so silly that, you know, you do your job and everything goes well, right? If you make a mistake, whether it's on audio or the camera dips or something, it shows on air and everyone sees it, right? And the feeling inside the newsroom is you're fired, right? At home, when you're watching the news, if the mic goes out, are you thinking, I'm never going to watch this again? If the camera dips, are you thinking, oh, I'll never watch this broadcast again? Like, no. So it was always just so stupid and petty. So yeah, that was part of it for me, was getting away from that. And I didn't try to, it just happened that when I was in New York, I had an opportunity to write a theme song for the show I worked on called Nancy Grace. And that was my foray into sync licensing, music licensing. So I got out of Dodge in 2006, left New York, headed out west to LA. And I started working in sync licensing, which is, the word sync is about synchronizing music to picture. I've done that for about 20 years. I'm a music licensing agent. I'm a music supervisor for films and TV shows. Currently working on the Bachelor franchise. And I also coach musicians on how to license their songs and films and TV shows. And I coach high achieving entrepreneurs on identity reconstruction, because as you can tell with my story, I've reconstructed my identity many times along the way. And I've had to wreck rooms that no longer fit me and step into and rock new rooms that are aligned with who I am along the way.
What are some of the things that you've kind of learned or took away from that journey? It's kind of interesting and cool to me, because I think I definitely am seeing a lot of those areas from afar. Like I've never personally been in really some of, you know, I'm loosely in media at this point, but, you know, kind of more on the podcast side. And, you know, you've definitely been kind of in the heart of a lot of it for so many years. You were at, you know, in Atlanta at CNN and things like that. You know, things have changed so rapidly. Like what are some of the kind of significant kind of cool things you were able to kind of witness firsthand, if that makes sense?
Well, I mean, the industry is always going to change, especially in media. I've definitely seen it happen, to your point, throughout the years, and more recently with the rise of the streaming giants, and now AI. AI is definitely impacting media as well. I think that in the entertainment business, you can't survive holding on to just one title. You have to be willing to evolve and grow, and you know, it's why when someone asks me the question, what do you do? My answer depends on who I'm talking to. I do a lot of things. So I always try not to limit myself and put myself in a box unless I'm in a conversation with someone who's hiring a music supervisor. Then if they ask what I do, I'm a music supervisor, right? If someone's looking for someone to coach them on identity, what do you do? Well, I'm an identity coach, right? So I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned along the way, is having to reinvent myself many times to survive in this space. It's definitely, for better or worse, it's taught me that. Yeah.
What you kind of mentioned, I want to kind of go back farther, but I want to come back to the coaching part and kind of how that came to be. But can you tell me, you said you kind of always been creative. For you, where do you feel like some of that comes from? Were you around some of that growing up, or did you just kind of develop that for yourself from an early age?
Yeah, both my parents were hippies. You know, I think that really played into it. They never hindered our creativity. My mom was like, you know, play in the dirt, doesn't matter. You know, I think that, and now that I'm older, I know there's studies on that. You let kids get dirty. It helps them with their creativity. But yeah, no, there was a, you know, my mom's definitely a creative type. I think a lot of it probably is in the genes. Yeah.
And I love that. And so tell me, I guess, kind of when you started thinking, hey, I want to help people in some of these areas that I've learned and developed, you know, kind of how did the coaching part come to be, and kind of tell us maybe a little bit about that evolution and like some things of what you like about coaching people.
Yeah. When I was younger, around 20 years old, I coached at a summer camp. I didn't call it coaching. I was teaching songwriting at a summer camp. I really enjoyed that. Even when I was younger than that, I was a song leader in my youth group, and I liked helping people and bringing them together and impacting them in some way. Helping someone level up their skills as a teacher, as a coach, it's very rewarding, internally. And after so many years working in a business that everyone is, you know, the entertainment business is, what can you do for me? That's basically the main question people ask. I got pretty tired of it, and, I started coaching in 2020 when, well, it was technically 2021, COVID hit in 2020, right? And Hollywood froze. So it forced me to re-examine what I was doing and what really mattered to me. It was the second time that happened to me. It happened 7 years earlier when my dad passed. You know, when you lose a parent, it definitely you're confronted with some pretty big questions. And one of the questions I asked myself when my dad passed was that, am I living the life I really want to live? So, however, it was such a traumatic experience for me because he died suddenly that I didn't immediately implement. I left, you know, trying to work harder to bury myself more into work, to not sit with that pain and that grief. And I did that for many years. So when COVID hit, it was kind of the, it's not the right analogy. What did they say? The nail in the coffin. That's a terrible analogy at the moment. But, you watch Back to the Future, you know, Biff, how he's like terrible with like, why don't you make like a tree and get out of here? That's mm-hmm. me, dude. I can never get the sayings right. It doesn't matter what I'm talking about. I can never get the sayings right. So anyway, when COVID hit, I was forced again to re-examine my life. And the idea of teaching again was really appealing to me. So I went online and I started teaching musicians because musicians were always coming to me. They still come to me and ask for help with their music. I can't help all of them. I can't place all their songs in projects. It just doesn't work that way. But I can teach them to do what I did. So I started teaching musicians in 2020, and I still do that over at Elite Music Coaching. We still do that. But then about a year and a half ago, I started working on my personal brand, and I realized that I'm more than just a musician and a music coach, and my identity is has evolved beyond that. So I wanted to help other entrepreneurs and other high achievers that also, for whatever reason, they've built a successful life. They don't feel like they're successful. They're not aligned with who they really are. And that's really what I felt after my dad passed. And again, in 2020, they do say it's every 7 years you reinvent yourself. I don't know where I heard that, but I've heard that before. So every time I'm faced with that question, I have to evaluate where I am and what's serving me right now. And then decide what is it that is not serving me anymore and how can I wreck that and leave it behind and then step into a new version of myself. And that led me to create this Wreck the Room process that I've built here. And in doing that, I've realized even in the process of building it, it's much bigger than me, this system. And I hope that I'm not trying to promote it. I hope that's not coming across like that. Good. Okay. It's super important, this process of recognizing the room that you've built, because we all build these rooms when we're young. And that's our formative years. So for anyone watching this, whether you're military or not, you know, if you're thinking back before the service, before your adulthood, like ages 2 to 16, 2 to 7 is our most formative year, 0 to 7 really, but we don't remember before 2. So 0 to 7 and then 7 to 16, that's when we're really developing our identities. And these experiences happen to us. They don't happen from us. They happen around us. Other people's choices, how you're raised, what your teachers think, your friends, these experiences create these bricks that we start using to build a room. And these bricks install beliefs. You know, one brick could be, it could be a negative thing. I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough, whatever the bricks are. And then a positive thing could be, I'm only valued when I'm achieving, right? If you get good grades, if you're good in sports, that becomes a brick and you lay that down and that becomes a brick that you start building a room from. And most people carry these rooms into their adulthood. 85% of adults are still operating from rooms they built as children and they don't realize it until the structure is shaken. And that happened for me when my dad passed. The structure was shaken. And I realized that I was operating in this room that I had built as a kid, growing up in a chaotic household, to be the performer, always performing, always achieving. And this lie that I believed was that if I wasn't doing that, the people around me would realize I'm not worth sticking around for. It was a lie. It was a stupid lie. But that's part of the process is becoming aware of what your bricks are, what bricks you've built, and then exposing the lie and naming the room. It's really powerful to name the room. So my room's the performer's room, right? Other people might be the people pleaser or the invisible one or the perfectionist. That's important because when you name it, you can actually see it and you can start tearing down the walls and then step into the new room with intention and from a place of alignment and power. And it is a really, it's an intense process, but it's something that I think will help people for the rest of their lives. The people who do go through it, it will help them learn to wreck and rebuild again and again and again, and then live a life that they want to live from who they really are, not from all these experiences and circumstances that made them think I'm supposed to be this way. Expectations and traumas and wounds and all these things that make you think this is who I am. It's not necessarily really who you are. It's who you've become based on what happened to you. So stripping all that away and then asking yourself questions to realize this is who I really am. This is the life I want to live. And then designing that life and stepping into that.
No, I love that. And I think, you know, you talked about kind of building something that's kind of bigger than yourself, and definitely, you know, I think it's very practical for us, you know, as, you know, being stewards of building a conference and a community and a safe place for creators and creative minded people to do more creative things together, and, you know, not think we're losing our mind or just all crazy, you know, that there's other crazy people out there like us. So I love a lot of what you mentioned. What, as you kind of helped for yourself, maybe on, which it sounds kind of cliche-ish, or, you know, personal branding is kind of, everybody kind of has an opinion maybe about that term. But as you were kind of reinventing yourself and focusing more on branding, kind of a personal brand, and help other people do that, what are some kind of challenges that you kind of see that are common to multiple people that you help? Is there any kind of commonality, or maybe just what is, you know, something you've noticed as you helped yourself and you're helping other people do that?
I think the biggest hindrance is not wanting to actually do the real work, the hard work. And that's the awareness stage. That's the first stage of wreck the room. It's recognizing the room. And people say they want to do the work. I want to change. I want to evolve. You've got to do the work. And that's, you know, most high achievers think that if I add more strategy or more teams or more hires or more tactics, right? More sales tactics, that's going to solve the issue. That's just throwing more at a problem. It's like rearranging the furniture on the Titanic. You know, it looks nice, but the ship's still sinking. So if the foundation isn't solid, then nothing's going to change. So I call those people, they fall into a mode called renovating. They're renovating the room instead of wrecking the room and rebuilding it. And then there's people who they're stalling, like they're aware of the issue. They know what the foundational issue is, but they're not taking action. And they're stalling. It's like analysis paralysis. So perfectionists often fall into that place. You know, it has to be perfect before I move forward. Taking action is an important step. And a lot of people just won't take action. They're waiting for something to be just perfect. And that's something I think that I've taken for granted. I'm an Aries. I'm a fire sign. I always take action for better or worse. But I recognize not everybody does. I do fall into that habit sometimes, though, of wanting it to be perfect before I step into it. So wrecking the room, it's not like a one and done thing. It's a constant work in progress. And the more you do it, it's like going to the gym. The more you lift weights, you know, the better you become at it, the easier it becomes. Your body adapts. And it's the same thing. It's just a mental process to go through.
No, I love that. And I think just always a good reminder, you know, I do a couple different podcasts, and anytime this kind of a thing comes up, definitely, I think sometimes no matter how long you've been doing something, you forget that you have to do the work and put in the work. You sometimes somehow think there's a shortcut you can take, or, you know, where we can kind of hack it a different way. But it always comes back that you just literally have to do the work day in and day out. So I think that's a great reminder, really, kind of for everyone. So can you tell us, you know, maybe if someone's listening and they're excited to go to Military Creator Con, or maybe they're kind of on the fence if everything's for them or applicable to them, you know, what's something that you're going to kind of talk about while you're at Military Creator Con that you're kind of excited about, but that somebody can hear right now that they can kind of look forward to when they come see you talk?
I mean, man, we're going to recognize the room together. We're going to do the work together. That's going to be, I have a really, really fun experience plan for everybody coming to Military Creator Con. So if you're prepared to do some work and have some fun, it's going to be fun. We're going to wreck the room. We're going to be, you know, shouting out things in the room. It's going to be a conversation back and forth with the audience. So I'm pretty pumped about it. Yeah.
Awesome. So thank you again. I want to thank you for your time today, Jody. I look forward, you know, I've just kind of just getting to know you very, very limited so far. So I know I'm speaking for myself that I'm super excited to meet you in person and get to hang out with you for a little bit in Arlington at this point. I don't know when people will hear this, but not very many weeks from now. So I'll be together in around 3 weeks from now. So super excited about that. And can't wait to, you know, get to know you now, but like really, you know, develop out and kind of cheerlead from afar, you know, for all the things you're involved with. And thank you so much for your time today and for being willing to come speak at Military Creator Con.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
At militarycreatorcon.com.
Great XQ. Roger.